So, over the last couple days, obviously we've spent a lot of time talking about the tools that are available, and I'm here to talk about some more of them as well, but also introduce you to some of our AP-specific tools. And then I'm going to turn the discussion over to things that we actually use in CS50 that we think you could use in your classroom as well, and then finally turn it into a discussion about tools that you use in your classroom that you think it would be good for others to know about. Because one of the great things about having everybody together like this, where you all come from different backgrounds and you have different platforms and tools that you've sort of discovered over your years of teaching, is this is a great opportunity for us to all share those together. And so we want to definitely take some time to do that as well. Hopefully this will pop up here. What's going on here? There we go. All right. So the first tool, and it's probably one of the most important ones in terms of how we've organized things for CS50 AP specifically, is cs50.harvard.edu/AP, which is the what we call the AP portal. If you have not already signed up for an account on this, you can visit this site and request an account. It asks for proof of teacher status. We do offer all of our curricular materials. Obviously, anybody can go online and find them. Students can find them. Sort of like part of the ethos of CS50 is that everything is freely available. But we do make a couple of select things specifically available to teachers, such as grading rubrics, sample solutions, and the like. And this is one of the ways that you can access that. So the site looks like this. I'm logged in, so it'll look slightly differently if you're not logged in. When you try and sign up for an account, it's going to request proof of teacher status. You can just write that you're at this workshop. You don't have to go and find your link to your page on your school's website, which might not exist. But that just lets us know that you are a teacher, because we'll recognize your name when you sign up as well. And from here, you can pretty much find everything that we have done for CS50 AP organized according to the layout of the curriculum. And the caveat I will offer here is that over the last 2 years, we've gotten a lot of feedback from folks. Sometimes it's conflicting feedback on the best way to redesign this page or to make it more teacher friendly. And it is something that we are constantly working on, trying to find the right time to switch the look of this over or to give you all something slightly different to work with that is maybe user friendly. But some people would argue that maybe it's not as user friendly. So the look and feel of this page may change. But the overall intention that it be used as a potential for you to create a classroom, which you can do on here when you have an account, you can create your own page for your class, toggle resources on and off, let them see things. That way you don't have to build your own site. So perhaps a different version of teacher websites coming forth. But we've gotten a lot of feedback on the right way to do it, and a lot of that feedback is conflicting. So we're trying to find the best way to make it even out. All of our curriculum is listed here, organized according to the seven big ideas of the CS Principles curriculum, which you may recall from our discussion on Friday. From here, this is something the students could see. They could find all the resources. If you logged in and you were on your own classroom site, students who visit that page might not be able to see everything at once. So you can make it so that you only are displaying chapter zero or within chapter zero certain modules. That way you can reveal information to students as you go without it becoming quite as overwhelming as seeing everything thrown at them at once. If you select a chapter here, you get sort of an overview. This is the kind of thing that might be included in a syllabus if you wanted to include it. It sort of gives the high level, here are the things we're going to cover, here's how long it's roughly going to take, or at least for you how long we would recommend it take. The recommendations for time that we give are always based on 180 in-class minutes for 36 weeks. We know that every school is different, and sometimes you get your students two times for 50 minutes a week or whatever the situation is. So whenever you see time recommendations or the like on here, the expectation is that it's 180 in-class minutes over the course of 36 weeks. So feel free to adjust accordingly. But we lay everything out. We let you know what assignments are coming up in that unit. And then we also do this thing that when we started with the AP program, we didn't realize quite how bureaucratic things could sometimes be for you. And so we've spent a lot of time digging through the curriculum framework, the purple book that you've all received by now, and mapping everything, because we know that for some of you, your school administrators want to see how everything maps to everything. We want to see which learning objectives these are, how these map to this set of standards or this set of standards. So our curriculum is completely mapped to the College Board framework, of course, we're an endorsed provider, but also to CSTA's standards. And so if either of those is something that your district is looking for, we have it here. All of the enduring understandings and learning objectives and all those other two-letter acronyms that I forget what the meaning of is, and there's 346 of them or whatever, they're all here. So you don't have to go through and find all that stuff. So if you need it, it's there. So that's the chapter overview. If you then select a module from there, I'm actually going to select a different one just to look around. You're brought to a page that looks like this. So we have an overview, which would be maybe the way you would introduce the topic in class that day, or at least something to keep in mind what we're thinking about when we're about to frame these materials. We wanted to let you know that as well. All of the videos that pertain to that, that we would recommend you might want to include, whether you're using a flipped classroom model, you might want to assign some of these to your students to view. You can play them in class. It really depends on the model, adopt or adapt, that you decide to choose. Written resources, which I'll get to in just a moment. Slides, we provide a sample set of Google Slides or PowerPoints for all of our materials, which you are free to use as they exist, adapt them, some combination thereof. We repeat the learning objectives, enduring understandings. Some thought questions, if your classroom is prone, if you have students who are kind of prone to that sort of thing, where they want to tease things out a little deeper than we maybe do. We have a couple of questions to get students thinking about. We don't provide answers for these. They really are intended to provoke discussion. Some of them are actually unanswerable, like the second one here in C. There is no answer to that question, but we want students to maybe think about what the options could be. And then we have these things called reference sheets. These exist for pretty much everything else. And you know, one of the things we really try and do in CS50 is provide different resources, or the same resources, for different styles of learning. Right, so there's David's lectures, which are fast-paced. They're going to cover things at a high level and really try and frame the discussion for what's to come. Then there's my shorts videos, which some of you might have seen, where I take a really deep dive into a particular topic, but we try our best not to look outside of that box if we don't have to. We want to confine students to the topic at hand so that they really get a better understanding of it. These reference sheets were undertaken by the CS50 AP team two summers ago. And there's sort of an ongoing thing where we try and take the shorts for students who are more text-based learners. Maybe, you know, not everybody is going to learn something from watching a video. They really just want to read something. And so we've tried to create these one-page distilled summaries of all of the topics that we cover in the class so that students can, you know, have a binder where they're just referring to them if they get confused, or just have them as some sort of tool at their disposal when they're coding and they don't really remember, flip through these and find them. So we introduce new terms. And we try and discuss everything we possibly can about that would be covered in the shorts video or in David's lecture in the course of a single page. So these are ongoing, but these are things that we would certainly recommend that you share with your students as well. So we want to make sure we provide resources for visual learners, written learners. A lot of our materials are available just audio only for students who want to listen to an educational podcast, which I assume all students do all the time. So that is... That is the AP portal. So you can sign up for an account. We will approve it probably Monday, because I know we're going to be super busy today, but we will get you on there as soon as possible. And then from there, you'll be able to create a page, like a classroom page, where you can have your students visit. I know some of the returning folks might be able to help you with that as well. So I know several of our teachers here have used it before. But we're also happy to take any questions that you have to get you started if you want to use this tool. Okay. So reference sheets I just discussed, you can find those on the AP portal. And if you want just them in bulk, I believe we can provide them in just a bulk like Dropbox or zip folder so you have all of them without having to dig through the individual pages.
Do you have to request those or are they somewhere?
Erin, do we already have them somewhere, the zip folder of all of the reference sheets?
No, but I can create them.
Yeah. We have them in a folder for us, so we can probably just zip it up and throw it somewhere. So the next thing is our Facebook community, which is different than the one, the huge, huge one. We have one that's specifically for AP teachers. So if you go to this link, you can request to join. It's basically an opportunity for you to chat with one another via Facebook. We don't expect that all of you will be able to do that or will want to do that, and that's fine. We just want to provide the option because a lot of us have Facebook, and that's where you might find yourself and you want to ask a question. So if you want to join our CS, this is specifically for CSP educators who have gone to CS50 workshops or are teaching CS50 in their classrooms. So you can bounce ideas off of one another or just get to know one another better there. We also have a Google group. So in the past, we've had something called the CS50 AP Discussion Forum, which is something that we created. We maintain the code base of. And one of the things that we've really tried to do in CS50 is go to where people are and not try and try and phase out putting people somewhere. We find that works best. You know, when students started using Instagram more, like we started migrating a lot of our stuff to Instagram. When students used Tumblr back in the day, we would post a lot of our materials there because we wanted to meet students where they were and not say, come here, come to this proprietary thing. So for a couple years, we maintained this discussion forum, and it just wasn't where you all wanted to be. And so we realized some place that you probably are all the time is your email inbox, if you're anything like me. And so we have this Google group, which you can, again, request to join, or we may actually, I don't know if Aaron's already automatically added everybody based on your emails when you registered. But this is another opportunity for folks just to email around. And there's been a lot of activity in here, which is really nice to see. Particularly, we started this, I think, in March or February or March of this past year. We deprecated our old discussion forum and switched to this. The great thing about a Google group is you can just receive it as emails and see emails come in and have them tagged for you automatically. Or you can actually view it as a web forum. It's available to do that so that you can scroll back through past posts. We also migrated all of the posts that existed on that discussion forum over into the Google Groups forum so that you can learn from what happened in 2015, 16, 17, and so on. So it's a great place to go if you want to exchange curricular resources with someone as we continue to try and find the right platform for that. That is one option for you as well. Vault 50. So Vault 50 is where all of our solutions are. All of the staff solutions to all of the problems that we offer are available here. Based on the GitHub usernames that you gave us on Friday, we will in the coming days add you to this repository, which will allow you to view all of the sample solutions there. We've started taking them off of the AP portal so the students don't accidentally get access to them, and instead restricted to teachers with specific GitHub usernames that we know only you can view these solutions. I certainly know myself when I go into office hours, even having done this for 11 years, sometimes I do not remember the intricacies of every little problem before I get there, so it really helps to look at the sample solution before I then walk out to start helping students. So I have these things fresh in my mind, like what are the little trip cases that I could get caught on? And we certainly would expect that you also might need to do that. It's a lot of material, we know. We don't expect that you have solved every single problem ever. Sure. I mean, it's true. I've done this for a long time, and like, there are still things about this curriculum that can trip you up. Like, C is a tricky language, and we teach a lot at the end too. We teach Python and JavaScript. Like, there's a lot going on, and none of us are experts in everything. But what we try and do is leverage the fact that we've done this for a while. We have folks who, can contribute these resources, and we want to share them. We want to try and bootstrap all of you by leveraging the skill, for lack of a better word, that we've accumulated over 10 to 12 years of teaching this material. So please feel free to use that. There's also one folder in this vault called Teacher Resources, which was something we tried to do to give you all a place to share resources. Not really sure how it's working, but it's there, so you can contribute to that if you have something you want to put into that folder. You will all have right access to that folder, so you can put resources there as well. Okay. Questions about anything I just mentioned about AP specific material?
Can I put a plug in for the teacher's resource?
Sure.
In the Vault 50, that was at my request. And it's really just a place, if you come up with something, take something on here that you felt went over well and you want to share it, you can just put it up there, put it on the email, on the Google. But it's a great place. I've gotten a couple of really good, I think it was based on Katie's thing that she made for studying for the Create.
Or for preparing for the Create. I really encourage you, if you do something that's cool, to throw it in there. And if you're looking for ideas, to go and look there. It's just something more geared towards high school.
Thank you. So I wanted to spend the rest of our session now talking about some other tools that we use. And a lot of these are not necessarily student-facing. They're actually things that we use internally to help organize ourselves or to organize our classrooms that we wanted to share. And then at the end of this discussion, I wanted to open it up for other things that are really like inspiring that you have found that you want to share with the community, because we have a great opportunity to do so here. The first of these is called Gradescope. Anybody familiar with Gradescope or have used it before? I see a couple of nodding heads. So Gradescope is something that we use twice a term to grade our exams. It's the only time when the entire course gets together to grade 700 to 800 exams, and we try and do it in like 6 hours, because students get very antsy after you give them a midterm, which we don't call it that. We don't call it a midterm, but it's a midterm. And they get very antsy, and so they want their grades back immediately. And so we give out the test. And in the past, it was on paper. It was literally the only thing we still did on paper. Now it is a series of text files that we have them submit using Submit 50. So we give them blank text files that all say to do, have them write their answers in, and then submit them using Submit 50. From there, we have a script that runs across all of our students and turns those into standard-sized PDFs. So no matter how much a student writes, some students will write a little, and some will write a lot. It will always be one page, which means we can guarantee that every PDF will be 7 pages. And even though the pages are arbitrarily long, we're not actually going to print them out. But what's cool about Gradescope is that you can, it was intended to be used on a paper-based exam where every page looked exactly the same. And then what you would do is you scan basically your master copy or a blank copy in, and it saves it as like a series of image files from which you can then draw a bounding box around the question and say, like, this is question one. And then you can say, you know, you can have rubric items applied to that question. So you do this for every single question in the thing. For us, we do it for like a whole page, and then we'll assign multiple questions on the same page. But your workflow may vary. Then what happens is you then scan all of your students' quizzes in, because they're all the same format. Again, we're doing this using PDFs, but you could use this with a scanner too. And then there's just a way to map every student's name to their file. So you just go through, maybe you have 50 students, 100 students. You scan them all in. High-speed scanners are actually getting less and less expensive, which is nice. And then when you go to grade, basically what happens is you choose a question. So say you want to grade question 4. It will only show you question 4 for that student. Then you'll, you know, grade it. You'll hit next, and it will show you the next student's question 4. This works really well for us because when we grade our midterms, we divide the staff into like multiple teams where each team becomes like an expert on a question. And it also, we have found it really useful because it gets you in the mindset of that question, which makes it faster as opposed to having like start at the beginning and go all the way down again and again. So you can grade question by question really rapidly and become more efficient as you do it. So it has worked really, really well for us. And if you give pop quizzes in the class, or you have this sort of bulk, you know, these exams that you do periodically, we have found that it really has improved our grading workflow. What used to take 6 or 7 or 8 hours to grade, we can now do in like 3 or 4 hours and still have the same level of student complaints about their scores that we had in the past. So we don't actually think it's encouraged any sort of like worse grading practices. It just is more efficient grading practices. So it's really a remarkable tool that we have really appreciated having been brought into our ecosystem. Yeah.
Actually, it's 2 questions. The first one is...
It's not amplified. It's just for the video.
Actually, it's 2 questions. The first one is about how do you guarantee where the answer will show up in the answer booklet or whatever? Because sometimes students are very creative in terms of where they decide to put their answer, or they change their mind or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because you're saying you are moving from question 4 to this student to question 4 to the other student and so on.
So the question was, how do we guarantee where students write things? And sure, there are students sometimes who will go out of bounds, but I mean, for us, or on a paper quiz, we would maybe have like question 4 and we have our text, and then question 5 is here. What we would do is we would draw the bounding box like this around the question, assuming that students will put it here. Some students might overrun the space. You can, if they're still on the same page, you can actually take the box it shows you and zoom out on the page and see more of what they wrote. If it says like continued on back or whatever, you could jump to that. If you kept a blank page, you can jump to that page in Gradescope too. Like you can move, you can navigate around within the Gradescope interface. For us, the dynamic size PDFs take care of that problem because no matter how much they write, they're always on the same page. We can just scroll up or down. But if you're doing it on a paper-based thing, the assumption is that the student is just writing in the space that you give them. If they decide not to do that, then that's, I think, a student bug, not a Gradescope bug.
So the other question is about Gradescope and how does it fit the policy of, let's say, Harvard or other institutions, because sometimes they force the instructor or the teacher not to use certain things, or if it's hosted in certain countries and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So the question was about how does Gradescope integrate with Harvard's policies. We allow students to anonymously create a Gradescope account, so they don't have to use their actual name. And as long as we know the mapping behind the scenes, that's okay for us. Obviously, your mileage may vary based on your school's policies and requirements. Our students are adults, so we can sort of get around that. But we allow students to sign up pseudonymously if they want, as long as we know the mapping. Same with GitHub, actually. Students don't have to provide their school email address when they sign up for GitHub. All we have to know is, what is your username? And we're the only people that have to know that. No one else. GitHub doesn't need to know your actual name. GitHub doesn't need to know your real email address, as long as we can make the mapping. The next tool is Asana. Asana is actually what we use in our office primarily to manage tasks. So for organizing this event, we had lots of tasks to make sure that everybody was in the right spot where they needed to be. But you can also actually use this to work with your students to create deadlines and tasks for them. I know some teachers have done this. It's really quite cool. It's worth taking a look. It's called Asana. A-S-A-N-A. And we'll share these slides. These slides are available too, so you don't have to write everything down if you don't want to. But you can assign deadlines, you can assign specific assignees to tasks, you can create a whole set of homework for like the week, for example, in this, and then clone that to all of your students so they all get the exact same copy of it, and then you can see who's checked off what and when. So we use it again as task management software for like the workplace, but I know it has been used in the educational context as well. Slack, again, this is another one there where your school's policy may vary. And an equivalent would be like WhatsApp or somewhere you could get in touch with all of your students at once. Creating a Slack workspace, Slack is generally freely available for a certain number of users, which most classrooms would not hit. It really is a great way to just get in touch with a lot of people at once. Hey, everybody, like we're going to change the deadline on this, or don't forget to do this reading, or if you forgot to assign homework at the end of the period because time ran out, you can just send a Slack message to everyone and allow students to create groups and communicate with one another as well. It's a really nice way to create a community. We use it extensively in our, particularly our, not CS50 itself, but Web50 or Games50, the courses that David mentioned earlier, the smaller group sessions. That's a really easy way for the staff to also quickly answer questions for students. And similarly, you might have a student who sends you a message and is like, hey, how do I do this? And they can't get a hold of you any other way. And it takes like 10 seconds to respond. So another option for inter-class communication. 1Password, this one is more best practices of being involved with technology, and this one does have a fee with it. I don't think I know the password to almost anything of mine anymore, which someday is gonna backfire on us, I know. But for now, it's still okay. I don't know almost all my passwords anymore. And the only password I really know is my 1Password password, which is super long and very hard to crack, I hope. Because otherwise this whole thing is kind of a moot point. But it's really good practice to encourage people not to use the same password for anything, and really to create passwords that are, the ideal password is one that's really hard to remember, right? But it's hard to remember a lot of hard to remember passwords. And so 1Password can do it for you. There's also a free option called LastPass, which might be Mac specific, I'm not sure. But password managers, they're really good things to just encourage your students to do. And it also gives you an opportunity to talk about, when we get to security, the security section of CS50 AP, to talk about why we would have a tool like this, why it is important to have secure passwords. So highly recommended, certainly for all of you, if not for your students, password managers are a good thing to invest in. Please Bring It. is another good one that we think is particularly useful for those of you who are organizing events like Puzzle Day and the hackathons, right? So what we do a lot of the time is we work with local businesses to see if they can provide us discounts on food, which we usually can arrange because it's like, hey, we're gonna buy 200 pizzas. Like, can we maybe get a break on the price? And they're like, oh, sure. You might not have to order 200 pizzas, hopefully. But also, you might not have a huge budget for these events. I know certainly for those of you in public school, you probably have zero budget or almost zero budget for these events. And we don't want that to be necessarily a hurdle. A couple years ago, we did our first CS50 AP hackathon at the Browning School. I think David showed a video, photo of all of us there. And what was really cool is, you know, we went ahead and we did a lot of planning for that event and we had ordered stuff and we get there and there was this team of parents who had baked cookies. And there were tons of like cookies and cupcakes and stuff. And it's like, that's actually like a really good idea for when you're doing this without, you know, the luxury of having, you know, what we have, which is this big team and these resources. Having your kids reach out to their parents to help provide certain materials. That way everybody's sort of crowdsourcing this event together and you maybe you're the point person for it. But it's probably in general a little easier for every kid to chip in $10 towards this event than for you to chip in or try and get your school to ship in $500 or $800 for the event. You can still put on these events relatively inexpensively. Honestly, with the kits, you can get a room and usually a local pizza place will help out if you agree to thank them on the website or something. Like, you can do these events inexpensively, but please bring it as a great way to assign your students, like, hey, can you or your parent or whoever bring this to this event? And they can bring it and hopefully make this event more successful for everyone. Zoom. So we use Zoom quite a bit in the extension school versions of our courses. It is online. We use it to teach online sections, but it is online live video collaboration. Zoom is free for sessions up to 40 minutes long. So maybe you have a thing where you want to conference a couple of students in on something, or you want students to conference with one another about something. There's certainly other tools for this too, like Google Hangouts and stuff, but Zoom is really robust in as much as it's really good for screen sharing, for chatting, for private chats, where Google Hangouts is a little looser on this. You can do file sharing and stuff here too. There are other tools too. Adobe Connect is another popular one that you could use. We've sort of deprecated it. We find Zoom a little bit more user-friendly for our use case, but it's really great live video collaboration software. Yes, of course.
You said it's free for up to 45 minutes?
Yeah, it's free for, so the question was it's free for up to 45 minutes. It is free for up to 45 minutes, and then you can honestly just restart another session. It just.
Quantity of attendees?
I think it's 100. I think you can have 100 attendees in those sessions. It's 50 or 100. But it's quite a lot.
It says 100.
It's 100? Okay, it's 100 attendees for 40 or 45 minute sessions. All right, so this is one that I'm sure a lot of you use, and we discovered some features about this probably like 5 years after the rest of you because no one told us about them and we didn't go looking for them. And so in the interest of paying it forward, I will probably tell you things you already know right now. But in case not, hopefully I'll save you a couple of years of eventually stumbling into these settings. So Google Forms, we use a lot for our students' forms at the end of problem sets. We use it for our staff. We use it for like everything to collect, you know, what you collect information on forms about. Google Forms has file uploads available. It used to be restricted to a Google Education account or Google Classroom, and you could only upload files from people within your organization. That's no longer true, which we didn't realize for like 2 years. So you can have students upload files through Google Forms as well, which is really cool. Then, in the settings, which I really should have just looked in the settings a long time ago, you can collect email addresses, which means that the email address of a student is pre-populated in there. You know exactly who did it because they're logging in with their Google account to do it. So if your school has a Google account set up, it's really in case like somebody forgets to put in their name. Or maybe you like accidentally forgot to make the form require, the field require where they were typing in something. You can collect email addresses, and you can also enable response receipts, which means that once the form is submitted, the student gets a copy of what they submitted, and then there's also an ability to edit their responses, which is quite useful as opposed to getting 9 submissions from the same person. And, okay, this is the big one for us. the quizzes thing, which we honestly did not know was a thing. So you can, we do this actually now for our for CS50T and CS50B, which are our two sort of lead-ins to CS50 that we teach online and we made available on edX. So Aaron and I actually grade those courses, and we were trying to figure out for the longest time like how to collect assignments for this, right? For CS50X proper, we can just have people submit through Submit50 and we have it auto-graded. But all of the assignments that we use in those two classes are written. People write a response to some question that we're doing, and we're trying to figure out how are we going to grade this many things. And we underestimated how many people would do it. So we actually recently broke Google Forms because both courses have recently hit the point where there's 1,000 submissions for each of these. And it turns out that up until I complained to Google about it 2 weeks ago, it was impossible to release scores for people after 1,000 submissions. So if you have not yet encountered that, there's a bug. But it's now fixed. But now it introduced a new bug where instead of just you releasing scores for the new submissions, you have to release them for everybody again, which is kind of unfortunate. But you can, so you can turn a form into a quiz, and when you do that, it creates a really interesting grading interface where you can, similarly to actually Gradescope, view all of the answers to a particular question. And if you make them out of 1 point, you can sort of just check or X or check or X whether the answer is right or wrong really quickly. And if you have really short answers, like for one of our questions, we give them this scrambled up message, and it's the answer is 42. And so if a bunch of people write 42, it'll say, you have 104 submissions that say this. I can grade literally all 104 of them at once, which is really handy. So, and you can also, if you, you can also do, we do manual grading because all of our students' answers tend to be different, but you can configure this to auto grade as well if you have short form answers that you're looking for. And it will auto grade the responses, and you don't actually have to do anything to collect and grade short pop quiz type questions. So again, hopefully maybe you all knew about this already, but this was like a new discovery for us that was kind of like game changing for us for our courses. Slido is a great opportunity to have polling, live polling in class if students about with questions and such. And of course, there's the other tool that we introduced yesterday, Mentimeter, which is where we were having the breakouts and then the answers were sort of popping up and scrolling by and bubbling through. That tool is called Mentimeter.com. And there are different views. So this view shows you a live poll with like a bar chart. But if it's longer answers, you can have them scroll through like that. It's kind of an interesting visual interactivity thing for polling or having discussions in class. So we've recently discovered this one, and we really like it. So I wanted to make that known to you as well, in case you didn't catch what the name of the tool was yesterday. Now I want to open it up to tools that you use that are amazing that we could use too. And I'm going to switch to just, I have one more slide here where I can just take notes on what they are. But have any of you encountered tools that are like have been game-changing in your classroom that you might want to share with everyone here?
I haven't really used this in a classroom setting, but the Slack, if there's any network security, if your organization doesn't like it, Microsoft Teams is a good alternative. Okay. The organization I was with, they wouldn't let us use Slack, but they told me about Microsoft Teams, and it's pretty comparable.
Okay, great. Thank you. Microsoft Teams, I saw a couple over here. I'll have you all just pass the microphone back since this is kind of a sequence.
So I use YellKey because ShoutKey went away, if you know about ShoutKey. So YellKey will give you a temporary URL, but it's temporary, so they can use regular words. Now, it's not so great when they choose homonyms. You're like, which where? But aside from that, I just tell the kids, YellKey potato. They type it in, and they go to some URL that otherwise would be laborious to share with them, like some crazy bit.ly with
letters and numbers. Nice. So it sounds like it's a bit.ly. I think Mark had one.
Two words,
yellkey.com. I'll give a shout out to actually learn to use Git a little bit, either both the command line tool and the GitHub tools. Since CS50 is using it so heavily, there's a lot you can do to like actually get a little more functionality.
And Aaron, can we actually make a note to send Brian's video about introduction to Git and GitHub around? We've actually produced a video as a seminar at the end of 2016 which has been well received by students. So if you do want a crash course in Git, we have a 45-minute seminar that can introduce you to a lot of its basic functionality. Since we do abstract a lot of it away from students via Submit 50 or the like, you can actually take a look and see exactly what's happening, though, underlying those Submit 50 calls, if you'd like.
Yeah, I use a tool called Padlet, which is similar to Mindy, but I think it's better because the one that you guys used has had some kind of animation, so it's kind of distracting. And the other one, you have more control. I mean, I didn't use this one, so I don't know how to compare, but it has control and filter for, profanity and some, you can provide links, pictures, images, and it stays there, and you can actually share it for later.
Great.
So it's called Padlet.
And I think after you, I think Emre had one as well.
So building off of Git, I discovered this year, I guess it's been around, but I just discovered it as GitHub Pages, which is really terrific for hosting a basic website. You can't do a front-end, back-end thing, you know, with Flask, but, you know, if students are doing an introductory website with some CSS and JavaScript, you actually have a real URL and you can run it without having to go into the IDE, which is fantastic. So yeah. A few of my students did that and they were so excited.
Yeah, so GitHub Pages is actually an option that you can enable within any GitHub repository that you own. We actually use it for a couple of our course sites as well. And it's just it's a way to push your code to GitHub and then have immediately it propagate out to a website. It takes like 20 or 30 seconds after a commit and you can have an updated site. So it is a really handy tool to have just a single spot basically. And it does give you a URL, which is basically your GitHub username.github.io/whatever the name of the repository is. It's very
handy.
This
year, since everybody has GitHub accounts, it's just so easy.
Exactly.
So it's perfect.
In the past, I used several online assessment tools, including Google Forms, Socrative, and Kahoo. I believe everyone is familiar with that.
How do you spell that one?
I haven't said that yet.
So, oh.
but there's another tool which is called QuizIz. It's quiziz.com. That's a great tool for online assessment, and it's pretty good for item analysis. So as soon as you're done with live quiz in the class, or that you can also set for homework. So you can set a deadline so a student can take it at home, and then afterwards it gives a really deep report, shows every single question with their analysis. And if it's a live quiz during the class, let's say as soon as it's done, it just pops up and then highlights of the quiz. This is the like most challenging question. So there's a lot of things that it automatically shows you the result instead of just getting into it and, you know, spending time with that.
Great. Thank you. I'll turn the over to this side of the room. Anybody? No? Lisa?
I'm not sure if it's free or not, but Pear Deck is a nice way to enhance some of your slides, and it makes it interactive with the students.
IR? Pear?
P-E-A-R. Pear Deck, and they've recently put in a link to Google Slides with a Pear Deck vocab factory. So if you want to add that up there, it's two separate things to look into. Very, very engaging for the students to work on their vocabulary. It's a little bit of a game.
Anyone else have anything they'd like to share before we wrap up the session?
While I have the mic.
Okay, while you have the mic.
The other one, the name escapes me now. I'm gonna have to pass.
Well, it's a good thing we have this Google group that we can share these ideas on afterwards.
One that I use is Quizlet for vocabulary.
Quizlet, okay.
Yeah, it presents the questions in different forms, so.
Yeah, what vocab factory will do.
I'm getting some exercise this morning. It's good.
What Vocab Factory will do is produce a Quizlet card set that the students can then use. So they create them together. And
okay, great. All right, well, one more note. You're good. We have a few minutes.
I haven't used it a ton, but there's a thing called Plickers, P-L. So it's clickers, but with a P. And so that works. You print out QR codes and pass them out to students, and they can be individually assigned. You can attach them to names. And it's for multiple choice questions. So if they hold them one direction, it's an A. A different direction, like a different orientation, is a B. And then you just wave your smartphone and it reads all the QR codes and collects data on student responses. You can project a graph of what they chose. But then behind the scenes, you can do analytics about, oh, Johnny seems to be misunderstanding a lot of these questions. You can go have a conversation with him.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Another drawing tool like Google Draw, there's another one, it's called Draw.io. That's also good for collaborative work, and like you can consider that as a like more advanced Google Drawing tool. Draw.io, that's another tool that you can use.
Oop, too big. I think Alice had one?
So this is seems a little more basic than Gradescope, but I've used ZipGrade, and it's just Scantrons, and it saved a ton of time for me. But it's for multiple choice questions. And I also use Remind.com. A lot of you may have heard of that. Slack, I think, if you have to download the app to get the notifications from the teacher, but if you have Remind.com, they can get text messages from the teachers, and it keeps everything anonymous.
Great.
Is it the same as Remind?
Thank you. One more?
And Remind is also available as an app. So you can download it on the App Store.
Oh, great.
So that's really cool.
All right, well, I think we're going to wrap up this session because we have some more to get to. But thank you all very much for sharing your weekend with us, first of all. But also these tools, really appreciate it. So these will be, we'll make this available as part of the deck that we distribute to you as well. So you can take a look at these tools. And some of the other ones that we shared in depth. And if you have any questions about anything that we talked about at the beginning, any of the tools that we provide specifically, or how we use some of these, if you want me to get into more detail about them, don't hesitate to reach out and let us know. All right, thank you.